Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Gray Days by Haley Edwards, narrated by Stephanie Richardson. Chapter 1. Most adults outgrow the monsters of their childhood, real or imagined. But some will check under their beds now and then before they close their eyes for the rest of their lives, just to be safe, just to be sure. Me? I might as well be down on my hands and knees, gazing under my bed into the abyss, unsure if I ought to pray that the glowing red eyes of my personal boogeyman blinked awake for me or never opened again. Where are you, old man? Director. Without a body, without hard proof he had been slain, I might never sleep again. Director. Not when I was standing on the granite shore beneath a cliff where a small girl once walked up to a grim mansion that would never be her home and became one of the very monsters that had tormented her. Not even the relentless midday sun beating down on me could thaw the chill from my bones.
He's talking to you, dollface.
Clay braced a steadying hand on my shoulder.
You're the director now.
Interim director. I reeled my gaze in from the churning waves and turned it on the spindly man. Yes? We pulled four more bodies from the rubble. He blinked vertical lids. One survivor. Immortality was great, in theory, but there were downsides. Say, a building falling on your head, pinning you to the ocean floor, where your regenerative abilities healed you as fast as the salt water rushing into your lungs drowned you all over again. The spindly man lingered, waiting on me to ask, which I did with a sigh. Any sign of him? Him. The director. My grandfather. We had no hard evidence he had survived, and yet... The tip line we set up for locating missing agents, those who decided now was a great time to go AWOL, had netted us sightings of him, too. With Bjorn. That I could believe. His toady was always lurking nearby, but a frost giant in Florida? Even leashed to the director, that was a stretch. No director. His unnerving eyes blinked again. We have yet to locate him. As dread crept over my skin, raising goose flesh, I became that much more convinced he wasn't there for them to find. I doubted he was in Florida, but I bet he was somewhere other than the bottom of the sea. Go on up with your team. I indicated the lift to base camp. Get some hot soup and coffee down you. We had heated tents set up on the broken road above us that led nowhere now, where divers, medics, and agents lending a mandatory hand after reporting in for roll call could warm up with hot foods and beverages to combat the chill of 37-degree water. Another slow blink lapsed before the spindly man lowered his eyes to his webbed feet. Yes, director. As he backed away, he kept stealing glances at me like he couldn't believe his luck I hadn't punished him for failing to locate the director, or his remains. Maybe I should have yelled or thrown sand in his face.
You're at the helm now.
Clay squeezed once before dropping his arm.
The ship is yours to steer.
Please don't mystic seize me right now. I rubbed my gritty eyes with salty fingertips. I'm not adopting that blue macaw from the exotic bird rescue either, no matter how many pirate swears he knows.
Uncultured swine.
He thumped my earlobe.
I'll have you know Blackbeak sings sea shanties.
Bet you can't say that three times fast.
A tiny voice challenged him from within his sea-green mohawk. When a flash of silver caught my eye down the beach, I left them to their tongue twisters. Asa's stamped metal earrings gleamed as he waded up out to his hips to help drag a body to shore. He wore his usual suit, minus the jacket, which made tag-teaming with Blay easier. His hair had started the day in a French braid, but now it tangled around his face and clumped in ropes down his back. His white shirt clung to his wide shoulders, the tail yanked out by the ocean's greedy waves. Most of the buttons had come unfastened when a desperate hand fisted the fabric as a survivor hauled her head above the choppy water. The result was a mouthwatering view of his bare skin each time the wind blew. And if I briefly considered tossing back women who clung to that bare skin, well, who could blame me? Once he came ashore, water sheeting off him, I walked up behind him and tugged a hank of his hair. A laugh stuck in my throat when he spun around to face me, his gaze swiveling in every direction, peridot eyes sharp. After a lifetime of protecting non-family members against the Yanai and their twisted sense of justice, he wasn't yet used to their absence. Until I saw him remember that, and everything that went along with it, I hadn't considered whether it was cruel to remind him. I'm sorry. I buttoned his shirt to give my finger something to do. I shouldn't have. Old habits. His icy hands covered mine. It's fine. But I wasn't sure it was, or what to do if it wasn't. I'll give you another 20. I gave his collar a tug. Then you're both going to refuel and rest. Yes, Director. The urge to roll my eyes twitched in my lids, but I was a good girl and checked the impulse. I had never had a problem flashing my disdain for the organization or the man behind it, but to effect change, I would have to rethink my coping mechanisms. For now, I was too busy using paperclips and scotch tape to hold what remained of the Black Hat Bureau together until after we determined if the director had gone down with his beloved ship. Gah! Now Clay had me Mystic Seas-ing myself. A whip crack of pain sliced across my palm, igniting my skin, and I dashed to the water to dunk my hand. I hissed through my teeth until the sting ebbed to a tingle, then yanked it out to study the fresh pink scar left behind from where the rune marking Calixta's contract due had ignited, then extinguished itself. Goddess, bless, I breathed, smoothing my thumb over the raised edges of the design. She did it. Hair plastered to his neck and face, Asa fished me out, guiding me onto the sand before taking my hand in his. His brow lowered as his thumb replaced mine. What does it mean? Calixta fought Stavros and won. I cast my gaze back across the fathomless deep. Or she died trying. Chapter 2. The evening view from where I sat bundled in a blanket with mylar lining, a travel mug of coffee gone stale at my knee, was eerie. Beautiful with the churning blue sea and bright white crests, but eerie. This precise angle framed what I saw, had seen, every time I looked out my office window. Former office, where my former assistant had clipped her last clop while I was a world away. And on the topic of things a world away, we had yet to locate Earl. The portal to Ferry remained open. Asa and I had seen debris come tumbling through it to the other side, but the access point here? We couldn't find a hint of it. Meaning I had yet another problem on my hands. Even if it had been buried deep in the earth, I had to close it, or at least contain it, to prevent it being welded against us again.
Come on.
Clay shoved his hands under my armpits and lifted me onto my feet.
You're going to bed.
There's too much to do. I wriggled from his grasp. I'm writing up the next shift rotation now. That I could barely read the names through my sand-blasted eyeballs was beside the point.
No.
He stole the tablet from my hands.
You're staring across the ocean like you expect Aiden to belly up on a rock and have a little mermaid moment.
He hid it behind his back when I grabbed for it.
Two things.
He switched to holding it over his head when my fingers brushed the screen.
He can't sing for crap. Trust me, I've heard things. Terrible things.
He hip-checked me to keep me away.
And Calixta won't let him out of her sight for a long time yet.
We don't know she has sight, I growled, done playing with him.
You're not making sense.
He patted my head.
That's why you're going to Nappy Nap. You've been up for 24 hours and change. Your workday is done.
We don't know she won, that she's alive. My voice broke. That he is alive. As her heir, Aiden would have been the first to fall if she failed to beat Stavros.
Hey now.
He reeled me into a hug I didn't want, but probably needed.
None of that.
I never should have let him go. I clenched my hands in his jacket. I should have-
He's alive.
The sob lodged in my throat broke open as Asa trudged up the hill to join us, nearly a mile away from the bustling tents. Sand caked the seat of his pants that hadn't been there when he walked away to make his calls to confirm we had cause for celebration. I'm not saying I stared at his butt the whole time, but I was desperate for a distraction, and it was right there. Which meant either Asa decided to cop a squat while he chatted, or the update from Tiago had knocked his legs out from under him. The former wasn't his style, but the latter would explain why it took so long for him to return. He had been gone for hours. Are you okay? I met him halfway and slid my arms around his waist. Do you need anything?
No.
He leaned into me, hands limp at his sides.
I mean, yes, I'm okay. And no, I don't need anything. It's okay to be sad, Ace.
Clay came up behind Asa, slinging his heavy arms around his shoulders. Colby slipped from Clay's wig and climbed up to hug Asa's neck, and we sandwiched him between us in a group hug.
It sucks that it happened this way.
The ocean spray had weighted Colby's wings, making flight almost impossible, and the heat hadn't done her any favors either. The poor kid was so exhausted from the stress and the long hours, Clay had to scoop her up before she slid down Asa's spine like a fuzzy drop of sweat.
He left us no choice.
He rested his forehead on my shoulder for a long moment.
Hale is better off without him. But he was still your dad.
Clay stepped away before things got awkward, for once.
You're allowed to mourn the person he should have been, the relationship you could have had.
Thanks. Asa ratcheted himself into an upright position.
That's one good piece of news.
Capturing his face between my palms, I kissed the tip of his nose. You don't have to fake it for us.
Faking it never leaves anyone satisfied,
Clay said, eyes distant as if imparting valuable wisdom. You should head to the hotel. I released Asa with a gentle shove. Get some rest. That had been the plan, until the brand marked me. None of us could rest after that without answers.
I'm fully recovered.
A flicker of amusement eased his frown.
You don't have to worry about me.
Rather than explain it was his heart, not his body, that concerned me, I huffed. I'm allowed to worry.
I'm over the iron poisoning.
He raked his hair into a tight man bun.
I can make it a few more hours.
Thinking he might need that time to decompress before he could close his eyes without seeing his father behind his lids, I was about to hit the lift down to the shore with him. I stopped short when Clay gripped my arm.
Not so fast.
He cuffed Asa's wrist, too.
You're both going to the hotel. I'll stay here to coordinate.
The fact I was too tired to fight back might have lent weight to his argument. But I wasn't about to admit he was right. That set a bad precedent. Our SUV was one of dozens of the same make and model in the makeshift parking lot. We only figured out which was ours after Clay used the key fob to unlock the door, which honked the horn. He released Asa, who he deemed the lesser flight risk, and returned the keys to him. But he maintained his grip on me until he could open the passenger side door and helped me in with a sleight of hand that deposited a drowsy moth girl on my lap, guaranteeing I would stay put.
"I'll call if anything interesting happens," he promised, bending to kiss Colby's forehead.
"You better."
A yawn cracked my jaw, ruining my tough act.
"Update me on the numbers as they come in."
"The numbers can wait until tomorrow."
He shut the door in my face.
"Nighty-night."
Had Asa not spaced out, I might have grumbled about how it was barely sunset. But Asa's world had been upended not long ago, and the hits kept coming. He didn't have time to recover before the next strike landed. For me to fuss about Clay's caretaking would be petty.
"You know how I feel," he said a few miles later. "You're maybe the only one who does."
Not many people got put in the position of feeling guilty for being glad a tyrannical relative was dead. "Bottling emotions is my thing, and you can't have it." I cradled Colby against my chest where she dozed off again. "You can't stopper yourself up, because you don't want to step on my toes."
"Your grandfather is missing. Your father is dead."
I bit the inside of my cheek, but that didn't erase what I had already blurted. I didn't mean for it to come out that harsh. I'm only saying you know, for certain. I puffed out my cheeks. "I don't. Not yet." I made a half-hearted gesture with my hand. I don't know what I would feel if I did.
"Relief?"
He aimed us toward our hotel.
"Anger?"
"Relief he's dead?" I crossed and uncrossed my legs. "Anger I wasn't the one to kill him?"
"You're allowed to mourn the person he should have been, the relationship you could have had."
"I'll do the favor of never telling Clay you quoted his advice, or else he'll start force-feeding it to us." A faint smile gathered on his lips.
"How is that different from what he already does?"
"Oh, there's a difference." I settled for folding my legs under me. "Quote him, and you're asking for it." A comfortable silence filled the space between us, but it still managed to prickle my skin. Does this change anything? I had been wondering since Carver put a bug in his ear. For you?
Will I storm off to Hale, dethrone the new High Queen, and destabilize the realm for my own gratification?
He kept his eyes fixed ahead.
No.
I'm not saying you won't get a second chance, because coups happen, but this is as good of an opening as you're likely to get. I set my hand on his thigh, supportive, not perverted, and pushed out the rest.
You have the people's favor now, but if you wait... They've proven fickle.
He agreed with me, but if admitting it hurt him, he didn't show it. If popular opinion turns against you, or me, the people might be swayed again. I bobbed a shoulder. That would be true even if you had still been Stavros's heir when he died.
I would have had a legitimate claim then.
He flicked on the blinker.
Now I don't.
There are ways to change your people's lives for the better besides slapping a crown on your head. A smile lifted one side of his mouth.
Yes, Director.
Too soon. I swatted him, then groaned when my phone rang with a familiar number. Hey, Carver.
I have disturbing news to report, my lady. As I was about to run through an assassin who dared to harm my queen, the coward begged for his life. That is common enough and does not bear reporting, but then he claimed the bounty on the rightful king's head has been cancelled, as there is a new ruler in Hyle. The rapscallion must be lying, as the rightful queen would have told me had that been the case.
For a moment, I could only close my eyes and be grateful the bounty had been revoked on Asa. The capitalized titles sprinkled throughout Carver's monologue pinched my stomach,
so I diverted him. When you say you were about to run him through, you mean bring him in for questioning, right? Rehabbing an assassin who only assassinated other assassins was not going as well as Clay had promised me. Old habits were proving hard to break. At least Carver only murdered people hired to kill me?
Yes, my lady.
He cleared his throat.
Of course.
A headache throbbed to life as I massaged my temple. Report in if you spot anyone else on my tail.
And the rumors?
We are investigating them. I cringed away from the necessary lie. I'll update you when I know more. Before he dug in his heels, I ended the call and slumped in my seat.
Not the outcome you were hoping for?
Asa cut his eyes toward me.
This should make you happy.
I am. I angled my head to face him. No one has a reason to come after you, guns blazing anymore.
But?
Now we have a pet assassin with nothing but time on his hands. One who needed to give up on his dream of being a member of the Queen's Guard if he stuck with me. There might be more attempts on our lives until the news of Stavros's death, and no one to foot the bills for those hefty rewards he promised, filtered to the outliers. But Asa was as safe as I could make him. With Stavros dead, Asa was better protected than he had been since before his father learned he existed.
He's sworn to you, and you're the director.
His eyes crinkled.
He'll have plenty to occupy him.
Though I did have a list of enemies as long as my arm, it was rude of Asa to mention it.
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
I drilled a finger into his side. I'm not that bad.
I know.
He sobered from one breath to the next.
That's what worries me.
I never thought I would live to see the day someone worried about me being too nice to do my job.
You're competent, but not cruel.
He made it sound like a bad thing. But in our world, reputation could mean the difference between life and death.
The agents won't know what to make of you.
True. Confusing predators was not a great way to kickstart my administration. But I wouldn't become my grandfather. I had worked too long to crawl out from under his shadow to let it eclipse me now. Maybe I should recruit Dad as my deputy director. A snort blasted out of my nose. Can you imagine? The director had pinned the explosive attempt on my life at Gloria of India on Dad. Did the agents buy it? It didn't matter. The director's word was law, and if he survived to point fingers, he would gladly blame Dad for the attack on the compound, too. So, as satisfying as it would be to accomplish what the director had failed to do and bring Dad back into the fold, I couldn't trust Dad to not finish what Luca started by blowing up the compound and taking out a quarter of our agents.
The director must be the apex predator at the top of the Bureau pyramid.
Are you saying Dad is scarier than me? I sucked in a sharp breath. I thought you loved me.
I do love you, and you are terrifying. But you're also empathetic.
I would rather be plain vanilla pathetic.
You care about others.
He ignored my grumble.
Regardless of any potential benefit to yourself.
I'm supposed to be making you feel better, not the other way around.
I'm not sure there is better.
He confessed softly.
I need time to process. Then I'll make my peace.
There I was, half wishing the director had been smashed like a gnat, while Asa struggled to process an outcome he had craved every day since he learned what his father had done to his mother. I didn't like the director.
I sure didn't love him. I wouldn't miss him.
But the fulfillment of a lifelong goal could, as I was seeing with Asa, leave you rudderless. It was time to give him a new dream to dream. Give me your hand. I waited until I had a firm grip he couldn't escape. Now shake. Rue. A ripple of doubt crossed his features, but he let me pump his arm.
What are you doing?
Congratulations on your promotion, Interim Deputy Director Montenegro.
Interim?
He snatched his hand back.
You can't do that.
Too late. I did a little dance in my seat. I just did. Scraping his palm on his pants like that might wipe off his new title, he scowled.
The agents will get over it.
I waved off his concern. I need someone I can trust at my back, and that's you. We had bigger problems than me showing favoritism, and I wasn't afraid to scare them straight until the title became mine for good. And I really did need a trustworthy second-in-command with the same drive as me to reshape the Bureau on the other side of this. Asa might not want it, or might not want it forever, but he would take the job to help me. And in the process, he would get out of his own way until he figured out what came next for him. This is a pity hire. He mashed his lips into a hard line. Clay would make a better deputy director. Everyone loves Clay. I bit my tongue. Not that everyone doesn't also love you. I threaded my fingers through his, promotion cooties and all. What I'm trying to say is, they don't always respect him, and this is not the time to loosen our grip on the reins. Change takes time. It requires sacrifice. Clay is too big of a softy. He believes every sob story he's told. He can't ride shotgun for me on this. Worse yet, Clay was stuck in limbo, unsure if he still had a master or if he was free. I hadn't brought it up, and he hadn't mentioned it either. Hope was a dull knife poised over your heart, ready to carve its message on the meat of your soul, and I refused to be the one who plunged the blade in.
Aside from my mother and grandmother, I'm fairly certain you're the only one who loves me.
Colby loves you. I leaned across, resting my head on his shoulder. Clay does too. And Aiden. To say his name knocked the wind out of me. But he was alive. That had to be enough. For now.
Aiden is safe.
He brought our hands to his lips for a kiss.
He survived.
He's heir to a kingdom in turmoil. Safe isn't the word I would use. Thanks to his sacrifice, he would never be safe again, unless I could deliver the director to Calixta. Even if she accepted the bribe, I had no guarantee she would release Aiden, let alone on the spot. That bargain would require keeping Meg on speed dial and herding any other sacrificial lambs clear of the slaughter. That meant, as much as the world would be better off without the director in it. I hoped we found him. Alive. His future was currently worth more to me than the damage he had done in my past.
Aiden survived, he said again. He's a survivor.
He brushed his lips across my knuckles.
He'll be okay.
I wished I was as certain, but I didn't want to make the fallout from Stavros's death all about me. To distract him, I posed a question that had been niggling me. Do you think we should rebuild?
The compound?
We could relocate. I tapped my foot, but that jostled Colby, so I quit. Move it somewhere else. To a location that wouldn't haunt me with childhood memories each time I stepped over the threshold. Without hesitation, he agreed.
That would be good for you.
Black Hat maintained outposts with lodgings in major cities that required a strong bureau presence, which meant the agents weren't out on the street. But we did need a headquarters, a place to train new recruits, to house the administrative and technical departments, that kind of thing. A home, if they let it be one. Though I wasn't certain the agents were ready for that much sentimentality yet. From here on out, I had a new question to ask myself. But would it be good for the Bureau? As if producing an answer required him to face down a tsunami armed with only a paper drink umbrella, he answered,
"A fresh start in a new location can only help."
I love the supportive vibes you're throwing my way, Deputy Director. I elbowed him. Sheesh. His soft laughter filled the cabin.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?